I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. While Baltimore's population is declining, the city has seen an uptick in the number of college-educated residents between the ages of 25 and 34. Today, another in our occasional series, Midday on Higher Education, in which we sit down with the presidents of colleges and universities throughout the state. My guest is the president of Harford Community College in Bel Air, Dr. Diana G. Phillips. Community colleges offer an affordable alternative with options for degrees, certificates, and training in trades. What can Harford Community College graduates expect as they enter the job market or pursue a four-year degree? Plus, Erica Bridgeford, a co-founder of Baltimore Ceasefire 365, joins us once again to reflect on the latest ceasefire weekend. First, the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Today, another in our occasional series, Midday on Higher Education. From time to time, I sit down with the presidents of Maryland colleges and universities to talk about the challenges that each of their institutions face and how those institutions are connected to the fabric of the communities in which they are located. Today, my guest is Dr. Diana G. Phillips. In 2017, she became the ninth president of Harford Community College in Bel Air. More than 18,000 students are enrolled in credit and non-credit programs. They are pursuing associate degrees in 54 different programs and 22 certificate programs. The current generation of college-aged Americans, for the first time in history, will be less educated than their parents, and nearly half of the students who begin community college are not able to finish. So we'll talk about that with Dr. Phillips, and we'll take your calls a little bit later in the program. For the moment, you're welcome to send us an email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR, and we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Dr. Phillips, it's great to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. It's great to meet you as well, Tom. Thanks for the invitation.
You're welcome. So you yourself, as I understand it, are a first-generation college student. You went on to get your PhD in education. Talk about the challenges that, in particular, first-generation college students face and how up at HCC you all are addressing those.
The primary challenge that first-generation college students face, Tom, is really what we call cultural capital. Higher education is its own entity. We have our own culture. We have our own language. We have our own processes and business practices and models of success and an understanding of what it takes to succeed. And many times, when you're a first-generation college student, you come into that environment without that cultural capital. I actually have an associate's degree from a private Catholic university in Hawaii. My very first college class, I spent 14 years on active duty in the Navy. My very first college class was a community college class, City Colleges of Chicago, in London, England. So when I worked on my bachelor's degree, I was on active duty in the Navy, and I was learning about the culture of a higher education environment. I will never forget my very first day in my doctoral program. I'm a graduate of the University at Buffalo, a prestigious AAU institution. And at that point in time, I had been a college student for many years. I was out of the Navy and I was working on my degree full time. And I was nervous. I was still nervous my first day in my doctoral program I was worried whether or not I had what it took to be a doctoral student.
Yeah.
So that's one of the first challenges that first-generation college students
face. Yeah, even
faces.
After experience in the military and experience up to that point in the academic environment.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Why do you think it is that half of the students who start don't finish?
Part of the challenge is it's not just about academic success. It's about I mean being good in a classroom. Our students absolutely come to us with the intellectual capacity to succeed in a higher education environment. But success in a higher education environment also requires transportation success. It requires childcare success. It requires the ability to plan a degree appropriately, understand where it is you're heading. There are life skills. life skills that are required to be successful in a higher education environment. And all of those things have to line up for college students to be successful. Now, the good news is those students that are successful, I might be jumping ahead a little bit here, students that transfer from community colleges and go on to four-year institutions actually graduate from those four-year institutions at a slightly higher rate than native students do on a national level.
That's
so
interesting.
There's good news.
And they've done it by saving us some money, too.
Saving a substantial amount
of
money.
The time,
and
yeah.
We can talk about that as well. That is a tremendous advantage to first 2 years at a community college, then you transfer to a four-year institution. You can, in 95% of the time, half the cost of getting a bachelor's degree.
Roughly how many of your 18,000 students are using community college in that way as a springboard to a four-year degree?
So our students state, 80% of the incoming students at Harford Community College state that their goal is to get a four-year degree. And at this point, just around 34% of them, 40% of them, depending on how you count the numbers, actually do transfer to four-year institutions, either in the state of Maryland or somewhere around the country. We're working on, and all community colleges do this, what we call articulation agreements with four-year institutions, that they accept the full associate's degree into, and it ladders into a bachelor's degree at a senior institution somewhere.
So those requirements that these four-year institutions have to be able to accept the credits that a student's acquired in her first 2 years, that's, I would imagine, that's informing the curriculum that you're offering in a pretty acute way.
Exactly. That's why we are responsive to the needs of our community and where the students are going and where careers are going in the grand scheme of things. So there are a lot of moving parts in planning those articulation agreements and ensuring that students are actually able to move through that pipeline.
How important is it, in your view, given your personal experience and your experience not only leading this community college in Harford County, but others around the country, that a person have in this day and age a four-year degree? We hear a lot about, you know, I mean, the founder of Facebook never finished college. The founder of Microsoft never finished college. We have online coding programs that people are taking. It used to be sort of that, you know, high school was the minimum requirement. And then a lot of people had a thought, I think, in the 70s and 80s that really a college education was the sort of minimal green card you needed in order to get into the workforce. I wonder if that's shifting, whether people really care about a four-year degree as much or in the same way as they used to.
It's a complicated question. I think there are some challenges, but I think I would answer your question in two ways. The first is one of the goals of higher education, of an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree or a master's degree, one of the goals has always been to ensure an entree into the workforce. And that's been a constant throughout history, actually. The folks that have the education in any community, even a small village, are going to have access to opportunities, workforce opportunities that others might not have access to. So one of the goals of a higher education is entree into a viable career field that is fulfilling to you as a human being. And the second goal that I would argue is just as important as the first goal, one of the things that happens when you engage in higher education is you learn about yourself. You learn about your humanity. You learn about what makes us human. You learn how to have two conflicting ideas at the same time and be comfortable with those inside your own skin. So one of the things that I tell my students and that I talk to the faculty and staff and administrators at Harford about is, yes, a college education is going to get you entree into a career field that is valuable and viable for you. And the second and just as valuable thing that a degree in higher education will get you is learning about your humanity and then bringing that humanity, what you learn about your humanity, and sharing it with the rest of the world. So when you ask me, is a college education still valuable? I would have to say, absolutely, a college education is valuable.
The four-year college education is valuable, or are you talking about a two-year associate's degree?
I think,
are they valuable in the same way?
I believe they're valuable in the same way. A two-year associate's degree, you can get an AAS, a technical degree that will get you directly into the workforce, and then when you're ready, transfer on to a four-year institution. So I think they prepare you for the same kinds of things at different entry points. A two-year associate's degree will get you the entry point into one level of career, depending on the career field, and a bachelor's degree will get you entry into another level of a career field, depending on the career. A bachelor's degree isn't going to get you access into the legal profession, to becoming a lawyer, for example. You have to go a little bit higher for something like that. So I think each is valuable and each serves, and the associate's degree in particular in today's world is a wonderful entree into the bachelor's degree program.
When you talk about finding your humanity, I wonder, is that akin to what people perhaps heretofore have referred to as the experience of college? Because I wonder if the experience of college, and by that I think a lot of people assume a four-year degree at perhaps a private or a public university, where you not only go to classes and get a degree and concentrate on this, that, or the other, but you've got the social experience, you've got the parties, you've got the mistakes that you make, the loves that you have and lose, the growing up that you do between the ages of 18 and 22. Mm. But like you, who I imagine, you know, finished your degree much older than age 22, mm-hmm. Many of your students are doing that as well. Even students going to four-year colleges are matriculating in 7-8 years. They're mm-hmm. not being able to do it for a mm-hmm. variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. So that experience of college, is that something that you worry about still? Do college administrators care about that? And do you care about it in particular in a two-year institution?
Absolutely. We care about educating the whole student. And what I would say to you, in Maryland, there are 16 community colleges in the state of Maryland. We blanket the state. Certainly at Harford Community College, other than residence halls, you have the complete college experience at Harford Community College. We have over 34 clubs and different clubs and activities. We have nationally ranked athletic teams. We have athletic fields that are second to none in the state of Maryland. We have social and cultural events. We have 3 theaters on campus where students produce plays. They participate in musical events. We have a music program. So it is a complete college experience at Harford Community College for sure. And what I mean by exploring your humanity, and you ask me, do we care about those kinds of experiences? Absolutely we do. We look at the student from a holistic perspective, and we recognize as educators that everything that they are experiencing on our campus is a learning opportunity for our students. They, for example, we talk about modeling the behavior you hope to inspire in others. That is one of the fundamental tenets that I believe is important as educators. Our students model how we engage with each other. They look at the kinds of things that we have on our campus that we have available to them. For example, we have a museum on our campus called the Hayes High House, which is one of the oldest buildings. It is the oldest building on our campus. And we have different kinds of exhibits in that museum. We have an art gallery on our campus, and students get to display their own art in that art gallery. Our students take trips. Last 2 or 3 weeks ago, one of my faculty member, an art faculty member, took his students to New York City to experience exhibits in New York City. We have another program where our mass communications program, where our students attend a national conference for mass communications. We take the idea of educating the whole student very seriously.
You have 54 associate degree programs, 22 different certificate programs.
Correct.
Is that, and I ask this with all love and kindness, is that trying to be everything to everybody? I mean, because so many other places, and certainly some of the four-year institutions with which I'm familiar, you know, they sort of say that this is a school that's known for X or known for Y. You can't be known for anything if you got 54 things going, can you? I don't know.
Well, what happens is those 54 different degree programs actually we could categorize them into what we call meta majors. So the meta majors are going to be art and humanities degrees, science, technology, engineering, and math degrees, the STEM degrees. Business and applied technology is going to be another major, and nursing and allied health, and behavioral and social sciences. So 54 different degree programs, but they really fall into five, what I would call meta majors that the students are going to enroll in. And one of the things that we're looking at, and in one of the initiatives that we're working on, is creating clear pathways for students so that they understand what those meta majors are.
It's Midday on Higher Education. I'm Tom Hall. We'll have more with Harford Community College President Dr. Diana G. Phillips when Midday returns after a quick break. And we'll take your calls and comments at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to send us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. The Associated Press is reporting today that the actress Doris Day died this morning at her home in Carmel Valley, California. The recording and film star appeared in nearly 40 movies and had multiple hit records, including this one from the 1956 Alfred Hitchcock classic, The Man Who Knew Too Much. Doris Day was 97 years old.
I was just a little girl. I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, Professor David Blight of Yale University joins me to talk about his fantastic book, Frederick Douglass, Prophet of Freedom. It won the Pulitzer Prize for History this year. We'll talk to David Blight about the amazing career and legacy of Frederick Douglass tomorrow on Midday. And coming up a little later today, the co-founders of Baltimore Ceasefire 365, Erica Bridgeford and Leatrice Gant, will join me to reflect on what happened this weekend, the latest ceasefire weekend of events and tributes. But now it's back to Midday on Higher Education. Dr. Diana G. Phillips is the president of Harford Community College. You are welcome to be part of our conversation at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWYPR. You can follow me on Twitter at @TomHallWYPR. You can also ping us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming our conversation live. Let's go to the phones to Courtney in Baltimore. Courtney, welcome to Midday with Dr. Diana Phillips.
Thanks for having me. I just wanted to mention an opportunity that could help people pay for community college or any post-secondary college expenses. The state has a relatively new but under-enrolled program called Save for College, the state contribution program, and it makes up to $500 available annually towards qualified Maryland 529 investment plans. And so you can learn more at Maryland529.com. I'm with the Cash Campaign of Maryland, but I wanted to make people aware of this because the deadline for applying is May 31st. So people are going to definitely want to go online and check that out now.
Yeah, thank you, Courtney. I appreciate that tip. May 31st, right around the corner. And, of course, 529s are, you know, a way of having tax-deferred money saving for college. You can use it for four-year colleges, and as Courtney's suggesting, even for a two-year college. When it comes to cost, cost has often been the, you know, one of the great selling points of community college. Mm-hmm. Should community college be free? Because there are certain jurisdictions and under certain circumstances where it is. Presidential campaigns are including a free community college education as part of their platforms. What do you think?
I think the answer to that question is we need to invest in higher education for certain in order to have a competitive workforce for the future. And if states and local jurisdictions can create programs that are viable and sustainable, then I believe, yes, we need to be investing in higher education. The reality is, over the last 10 years, governments, state governments have been disinvesting in higher education at the national level. And the ramifications of that is tuition costs and the costs of operating institutions, college closures. There are lots of ramifications for that disinvestment in higher education. I think that with the right legislation, college promise programs in the country, around the country, that have been shown to yield good results. And we have some new legislation here in Maryland. The College Promise legislation this fall will be our first semester in it, taking a crack at making that work for the state of Maryland. I'm looking forward to that. All of us are.
So what would that mean? What's different about the world with that program in place prior to when it starts being in place?
Here in Maryland, it's last dollar funding. So the way it works is there will be up to $5,000 available to students that meet income and other requirements, GPA requirements. And once it will provide opportunities for students that wouldn't normally have had that scholarship amount available to them.
If community colleges are free, or for that matter, four-year colleges are made free all of a sudden in a universal way, does that mean that states or even the federal government get into the business of running colleges? I mean, does it take the running of colleges away from educators like yourself and put it into the realm of another service that the state or federal government provides?
Which would certainly not be an avenue that I would advocate for. Actually, what happens is the way that these College Promise programs run is it's scholarship money that's provided by the state or a local community, and then students apply for those scholarships from the institution. So the idea is not that the running of the college would then be turned over to state governments. It's that scholarship dollars would be available to students in a way that in recent years they have not been available to students. So really, College Promise legislation, if you dig down into it a little bit, it's about the reinvestment in higher education and to sort of reclaim some ground that has been lost over the last number of years. And free community colleges, you notice I'm sort of avoiding that word, really, because nothing is free. We know that nothing is free. But the idea of having the ability to access higher education is something that we really want in this country. We want an educated citizenry. In order for us to have a vibrant democracy, in order for us to have a workforce that is prepared for our future, access to higher education is just a critical component of that. And so whatever kinds of initiatives that we can bring to bear to make that, to provide those opportunities, is, I think, something that is in our best interest as a country, certainly as Marylanders.
It's interesting that there seems to be a trend, maybe it's a mini trend, among four-year colleges to reduce their tuition. I know St. John's College in Annapolis going from the 50s to the 30s, you know, chopping off $20,000 or so in the cost of tuition. As I've talked to your colleagues around the state who run both four-year and two-year institutions, they say, well, the list price, the sticker price is X, but nobody ever pays X. So, of course, our question is, well, then why is the sticker price such a high X, you know? But I notice, if my information is right here, that you awarded 150 scholarships last year, and it's about $400,000 in scholarships through your foundation. But if you've got 18,000 students, 150 scholarships isn't a lot. Where's the potential for growth there? I mean, if what's quote unquote a reasonable cost for a college education, if it's several thousand dollars a year, there are plenty of people who can't afford that, who have the intellectual capacity to succeed.
Exactly right. So 18,000 students is made up of credit and non-credit students. We have just about 8,700 credit students, and those are students that are pursuing a credit-bearing certificate or an associate's degree. And then we have about 10,000 students that are in our non-credit programs who are also preferring pursuing workforce development certificates or community education. So the 150 scholarships tuition at Harford Community College this year is just under $5,800 for the year. And in the community college world, there's no such thing as one level of tuition at announce tuition at one level and then nobody ever pays that. That's actually something that happens in private higher education is discounted tuition. Mm-hmm. In the community college world, that is not a typical phenomenon that we would discount tuition. So the sticker price is the sticker price. And you're absolutely right. There are lots of talented people, citizens of this country that have potential and have the ability to succeed in higher education and in the world of work after that, that need access to those resources. And we do have a foundation and we do award scholarships. We also have students that have access to Perkins Dollars, which is a federal program that awards resources for students that are in technical programs. So we have private scholarships as well. So everything that we can bring to bear, we bring to the table to ensure that education is affordable.
Employers that I talk to, employers that we read about, say over and over that workforce training, workforce development is the key to their success. And all the politicians I talk to say that workforce development and a trained and able workforce is the key to economic growth, whether it be the city of Baltimore or the state of Maryland. Absolutely. Is the burden of workforce training falling on you at the community college level, or is it being picked up by these individual employers? Because a lot of employers tell me that they get kids or young people with an associate's degree or even a four-year degree, and they've got to sort of start from scratch to train them how to work in their particular company. Are you trying to come up with a curriculum that will attenuate that need on the back end with the employer?
Absolutely. We're working on initiatives. We call that the public-private partnership. And so bringing industry leaders, owners, CEOs, and presidents of companies into the college to serve on advisory boards. We're working on an initiative right now. We're calling it Harford Community College at Edgewood. And it is happening as a direct result of business and industry coming to me and saying, you know, Dr. Phillips, we have a workforce development need in the southeastern part of the county, and we would like the college to be involved in solving some of the challenges in terms of the workforce development challenges that we have in that part of the county. And we are absolutely hand in hand with business and industry and with county government to look at the southeastern part of Harford County, look at the emerging needs for workforce development and a trained and skilled workforce, and working with the community to create Harford Community College at Edgewood.
65% of the kids or the students, I shouldn't call them kids because some of them are perhaps don't qualify as that, but 65% of your students, more than 3,800, were students in the Harford County public school system.
Correct.
Here in Baltimore, institutions like MICA and the University of Baltimore, other institutions, University of Maryland at Baltimore, make it a point, an aspiration of theirs, to train and educate people who will then stay in the city of Baltimore mm-hmm. and contribute to its economic vitality. Is that an aspiration of yours for Harford County?
Absolutely.
And is it a challenge? Because nationally, we hear that people in rural areas are getting attracted to urban areas. We hear mm-hmm. that young people want to be where the action is. And even if you grew up on the farm, as it were, or in a rural environment, you may not stay there. And rural environments are you know, being in some cases, you know, they're facing big challenges having their young people stay there, even though generations before them had done so.
Mm-hmm. And nationally, a national statistic for community colleges in general is that sooner or later, about 90% of community college graduates will, they may leave the area, but they will ultimately migrate back to the community to raise families. We consider that a success. And it is absolutely true. Over 60% of our students come from Harford County Public Schools. And our goal is to educate them, to move them on into a bachelor's degree program, but to infuse the economic foundation of our region. Might not specifically be Harford County, but we're looking to respond to the needs of our community and our region with our sister institutions.
We have an email from Peggy who says, I have two questions. How many or what is the percentage of adjunct faculty as compared to full-time faculty at HCC? And does the future professor's salary depend on his or her degrees having any bearing on his or her beginning salary? Do you have a pay scale based on the degrees and experience?
Right now, we have a 60 across the board. We have just, depending on the day that you count, about 101, 105 full-time faculty members. And it's a 60-40 split across the board. So 60% of our faculty are full-time, about 40% of our faculty are adjunct, which is in many situations, that is an ideal percentage because adjunct faculty bring their industry with them into the classroom. And so it's vibrant. We have long-term adjuncts. And yes, we do look at, there are various factors in terms of assigning entry-level salaries for faculty members. And it's based, there are more than one element that goes into it, but degree and experience does play into entry-level and wages for our faculty.
We have an email from Eric who says, I've been working with a lot of kids in Baltimore City who are going to community college, and a lot of them are having trouble with remedial classes. They get stuck taking super remedial math classes and spend a year or two never getting to a point where they can take a math class for transfer credit. Mm-hmm. They get discouraged about that, and that contributes to them giving up and leaving. I've come to find out that this is a big problem nationwide. So perhaps this is one of the dimensions of this problem, why they start but can't finish. Are you finding that the students who are coming to you require a good deal of remediation before they're able to take college-level classes?
There is a percentage of students across the country that come not just to community colleges but four-year institutions that require remediation. And we are also in sort of renovating, I guess I would say, the way we do remedial education. And ensuring that we're wrapping services around students so that they can get into credit-bearing classes as quickly as possible at Harvard.
Yeah, because what Eric's talking about is that they take so many sometimes remedial classes, they haven't even gained any college credit yet.
Correct.
And then they just get discouraged. They're,
correct.
A year later, 2 years later, oh gosh, I still don't have any college credit.
Correct. So the idea is to try to create accelerated learning programs so that it's called just-in-time learning, and we're putting students in credit-bearing and non-credit-bearing classes at the same time so that we can accelerate the remediation is really the goal so that they can be earning college credits as soon as possible. And it is an important because it's a certain mindset that that you want to change in an individual or help remediate, really, to be successful in an academic environment. And accelerated learning for remedial education is one of the strategies that we're using at Harford Community College, and it is a movement across the country as well. And the idea is to get students the services that they need and actually accelerate the remediation.
Relationship between HCC and the Aberdeen Proving Ground. Mm. You mentioned your own military experience. You're in the Navy for many years. So you have this dual background of military and higher ed.
Yes.
As the job market evolves, we hear about the general non-military job market evolving and the needs of employers changing. Mm-hmm. And that's been the case since, you know, the Industrial Revolution. Mm-hmm. Are the needs of the military changing as well? Are the needs of that sector as an employer changing? And have you had to adjust what your curriculum is offering?
Aberdeen Proving Ground is the largest employer in Harford County, and we have a very strong relationship with them. When I came on board as president, we created a new position that we call APG Liaison, and her job is to ensure that the relationship between the college and Aberdeen Proving Ground continues to grow and to develop. And we've had some tremendous success with that. We hold career fairs on our campus for Aberdeen Proving Ground. We're starting a brand new co-op program in the fall where students from our campus are getting cybersecurity experience at Aberdeen Proving Ground. So it's a co-op learning experience. We're working with military and civilian employers at the Proving Ground to ensure that our curriculum and the programs that we're offering line up with their future workforce needs, because that is exactly, there are about 28,000 employees at Aberdeen Proving Ground, and they're always looking to their future workforce and partnering with us to ensure that our programs are lining up so that they will have a future workforce.
If my information is correct, by the time you retired from military service, you were a petty officer first class in the Navy.
I was.
So what did you do in the Navy? And when you talk to your students about your own personal experience in the Navy, what do you tell them?
I was a communications specialist, and I ran mainframe computers. My actual rate in the Navy was an RM, which is a radioman, and that was my rate. That was my profession. And I ran computers that were probably three times the size of this room and didn't have as much.
These are mainframe bad boys. Huh?
Mainframe, UNIVAC 900 computers. Some people will know what that means. And those computers, my cell phone now has the computing power of those computers.
Right.
So I was a communications specialist in the Navy. Absolutely. 14 years.
Dr. Diana G. Phillips is the president of Harford Community College. Our number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @midday WYPR. You can also follow us on the WYPR Facebook page. One of the degrees that you offer, or the certificates perhaps, is called the Cyber Defense Certificate Program.
Mm-hmm.
So is this, again, one of those examples where the military comes to you and says, this is what we need these people to do, so that when they enlist in the Navy, we're not going to have to start from square one showing them how to do this. So what's, for example, involved in a cyber defense certificate?
So it's about information assurance. It's a cyber defense. You're protecting your information, protecting it from attack. As we know in our world today, cyber defense, cyber warfare is a real thing that happens in the world. So cyber defense is a certificate to prepare students to be to work in information assurance, either in the military or, quite frankly, in the bank down the street also needs cyber defense. And yes, we have faculty, some of our adjunct faculty members come from Aberdeen Proving Ground and work with us to ensure that the curriculum is responsive to the workforce needs today and tomorrow.
How about the balance between the liberal arts focus for a student's concentration and these sort of, you know, for lack of a better term, the job training specific focuses? There's an interesting argument about people who are doing education in prisons. Goucher College, for example, has a prison education program, as do others. And they're offering liberal arts courses. And there are folks who say, well, why are you teaching these prisoners, you know, the humanities? If they learned a skill or a particular trade, they'd be much better suited to enter the workforce when they leave. How do you see that tension, if you will, between a liberal arts education and an education that's more career oriented?
And what I think we need to do is both, because I think folks that are in career oriented educations, my cybersecurity folks, they need to know how to think. They need to understand work in order to be a good employee in the workforce, what's called soft skills, how to engage in others, engage with others, interpersonal communication skills, work ethics, a morality in the workforce. So from my perspective, it's a combination of both. Yes, we teach people specific skills to get a job done, but the humanities teach us about our humanity and how we get along in the world and how we learn how to learn. Because you're going to be in a classroom for 2 years getting an associate's degree. When you leave us, if you go into the world of work, learning is, you're going to need to be involved in lifelong learning. So having an understanding of the humanities, understanding poetry, having a love of reading, appreciating art, those are the skills that teach us how to learn and how to think about cybersecurity or biology or nursing and allied health. So I think it's a combination of both.
Dr. Diana G. Phillips is the president of Hartford Community College, and our conversation today is part of our ongoing series, Midday on Higher Education. It's great to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. I've enjoyed being here talking with you, Tom.
Me too.
Thanks so much.
We're going to take a break, but before we do that, on Mondays here on our program, it's our practice to read the names of the people who've lost their lives to violence during the previous week. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. During the Mother's Day ceasefire weekend in Baltimore this past Friday through Sunday, police did report two men were killed and two others injured by gunfire. Erica Bridgeford, who's a co-founder of Baltimore Ceasefire, along with Leatrice Gant, will join me after the break. So far in 2019, 106 people in our city have lost their lives to violence. Wanda Diggins was injured in an assault last year. She died last week as a result of those injuries. She was 55 years old. Baltimore police have released the names of two other people who lost their lives to violence last week. They are Larry Petway, age 35, and James Lomax. He was 44 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.